Welcome. So, since we met last week, something happened.
The time change. Yeah. It changed, Kokyo. What does Dogen have to say about that?
I don't know how it did it, but the time changed. Yeah. And I kind of had forgotten about it until partway through the day. Like midday, I realized, oh, it's an hour earlier, and I had like this great feeling, like my life is like an hour longer. I was like, I just was so happy to know that there's this extra hour in the day, and then I remembered Uji, and I thought, like, how ridiculous that is. Like, wow, I have this extra hour. What should I do with it? And then, you know, of course, we'll lose it again in a few months. So,
don't get too excited.
Yeah, and at that time, it's going to be a painful day. We'll lose that hour. But how arbitrary it is, and how humanly constructed it is that in this country, and maybe other countries too, we just agree that, like, the time is going to change now. And we agree. And then, like, I felt like I actually really believed it. I mean, I really felt as if there was, like, an extra hour in the day. But it's completely just human construction, right? But it has effects, because now, like, we have this, such a regular schedule, right? So evening zazen now begins in the dark. Mm-hmm. It has a different feeling. Mm-hmm. So time creates a different feeling. I heard that in the old days, that like Dogen's time, they set up the schedule in the temple around sunrise and sunset. Mm-hmm. And there's still some places, like I practiced for a little while at Shogoji in Japan, where they try to keep Dogen's way very traditionally. And they do that so they actually, the summer, the kind of divisions of the day are like lengthened. They just like divide like sunset and sunrise into five watches or something, and they base the schedule on that. So the you know, I don't know if periods of zazen actually change length. I forget how that part worked. Maybe slightly. Different ways to deal with time. So we're at this point in Shobogenzo Uji, page 2 in this Xerox, where I think we're at the third paragraph from the bottom, at this moment. We're at the at this moment. We are at this moment. See that place? At this moment, you enlighten the entire world with three heads and eight arms. I found another translation that every place it says three heads and eight arms, which, you know, in parentheses it says like a fighting demon or something like this, or a, you know, wrathful deity. One translation says being angry. You know, it's quite interpretive, but it's saying the 16-foot body is being Buddha, and the three heads and eight arms is being angry. So it has a kind of puts a little practical psychological twist on these two sides that Dogen's poetically bringing up, saying, well, you know, being angry is being time, and being Buddha is being time. So you're gonna just keep that part in mind as every time the three heads and eight arms comes up, which will keep coming up. So at this moment, you enlighten the entire world with three heads and eight arms. And enlighten here is this word sho, which Dogen uses a lot when Dogen says, you know, practice and realization are not two. Dogen talks about practice and realization, and I know we've talked about here at Zen Center before too. It's a common way that Dogen talks about practice and realization is shusho, this compound shusho. practice realization. And literally the sho means verification, confirmation or verification. And I think it's just, although we've talked about it before, just to emphasize this again, I think it fits very nicely into this context of Uji, that practice and the verification of Buddha mind, or the verification, confirmation of peace, go together. The confirmation, verification of peace is at the same moment as a moment of practice. Right? This is a big, important teaching for Dogen, as opposed to the way we might think of practice as this like hard work that we're doing for this long time up to this point of realization. And they're two different things. The practice like leads up to realization. And it was one of the Dogen's ways of emphasizing the non-duality of Zazen, is that one moment of Zazen practice is one moment of verification, realization, confirmation of Buddha, we could say. So then the question always comes up, well, what's this practice then? How are we defining practice? And I recall speaking of it previously as the practice of completely letting go, the practice of dropping off all grasping in any given moment, in any given time being. That's a moment of peace, right? A moment of not holding anything is a moment of confirming what Buddha's mind is like. Just the Buddha's mind is like that all the time. But we can confirm it completely, verify it totally with one moment of total release, total dropping off all our ideas about everything. So that's a simple way that we might talk about it today, how practice and verification are not two. So that's this word here. At this moment, you verify the entire world. So, you know, enlighten is kind of like an interpretation. And sho can mean, you know, as Dogen's using it, it means verify or confirm Buddhahood. But here it could, you know, he uses it in this enlightened way so often that they just translate it as enlightened. But you could translate this sentence as, at this moment, you verify or confirm the entire world with three heads and eight arms. And, you know, again, moment is G, or time. Or, and actually, you, the word you isn't even really in there. Then it's the, you know, how to translate these. So it can be, could be also translated as, at this time, or this time verifies the entire world with three heads and eight arms. I think some of the translations put it more like that. This time confirms the entire world with three heads and eight arms. So almost like this time being, this moment right now, does the practice and confirmation and verification of three heads and eight arms as three heads and eight arms. The practice of this time being this time verifies each thing as it is. And that, we could say, is like enlightenment. Things being realized as they are, confirmed as they are. So it's quite dynamic here. You could, you know, there's all different dimensions in this one sentence. At this moment, you enlighten the entire world with three heads and eight arms, or this time verifies the entire world with three heads and eight arms. You enlighten the entire world with a 16-foot golden body, or this time verifies the entire world as the 16-foot golden body. To fully actualize the entire world, with the entire world, is called thorough practice. And it's thorough practice, or perfectly realize, or exhaustively penetrate, is mentioned as the, maybe Dogen's actually picking this up from this key sentence of the Lotus Sutra that Dogen is very fond of. Only a Buddha and a Buddha together can thoroughly exhaust the real aspect of all dharmas. This is a line from the Lotus Sutra using in this case, thorough practice. So only a Buddha together with a Buddha, only a Buddha and a Buddha can thoroughly practice the true form of all things. Something like that is this line from the Lotus Sutra. So, and probably, since several footnotes mention this, he's probably, Dogen's doing these little flash references to things like the Lotus Sutra, again, by just bringing out these details, can help us appreciate Dogen's just vast collection of things that he's referencing and pointing to, and like bringing in to this time being all these other Dharma teachings. And to fully actualize the entire world with the entire world, and as the next sentence goes, to fully actualize the golden body with the golden body is nothing but being, nothing but time. So, another wonderful practice instruction, you could say Zazen instruction, to fully actualize this body and mind as this body and mind is being time. Or, you know, to use this body and mind to actualize this body and mind. We're not bringing in anything extra. It's just, I also think of it in the Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra and those early Buddha sutras. I think the formulation is something like, the practitioner is mindful of the body in the body. Right, something like that. Mindful of feelings in the feelings. So maybe a little twist on this too, that it's like the body just being the body is manifesting the time being. And a way to fully actualize the body of Zazen, we just use the body to actualize that. As opposed to, like, to fully actualize the body of Zazen, we need to spiff it up a little more or something. Mm-hmm. Or we need to, like, you know, this posture of the body actualizes the body in the time being, but also, you know, this posture is also actualizing this posture in a moment. Using the Dharma at hand, as the Dharma at hand manifests the time being. And then to arouse the way-seeking mind, practice, attain enlightenment, and enter nirvana is nothing but being, nothing but time. So these four phases of practice, arousing way-seeking mind is Hoshin, short for Hutsu Bodhaishin, arousing bodhicitta. The way-seeking mind, right, is bodhicitta. To arouse the way-seeking mind, then to practice shugyo, attain enlightenment. In this case, practice is shugyo, and enlightenment, attain enlightenment. Here's bodhi, and attain nirvana. These four phases, you could say, that generally seem to be sequential. Like, it's kind of like a four-step practice instruction. First, you arouse bodhicitta, which is the aspiration to attain enlightenment. So arousing the aspiration, then, once, okay, I'm on board, I got the aspiration to practice and realize the way, then we have to practice, and then we realize bodhi, or enlightenment, and then nirvana, you could say, is the final, remainderless cessation. So just traditional way of talking about these four aspects of practice. But here, all of them, to arouse the way-seeking mind, practice, attain enlightenment, and enter nirvana, is nothing but being, nothing but time. And that each of these, it's coming at the end of the sentence, fully actualizing the golden body with the golden body, is, you could say, is all of these. Like the Buddha's body being the Buddha's body is the case at the moment of arousing bodhicitta. The Buddha being the body of the Buddha in the body is practice and is enlightenment and is nirvana. And this also is very similar to this formulation at the near the beginning of Dogen's continuous practice, Gyoji, which I brought up last week, and I wanted to correct myself. I said last week that the G was the same G as Uji, and it's actually not, and I went back and looked. It's very similar Chinese character, but G means time. In Uji, it's, you know, being literally being time. And in Gyoji, is Gyo is like practice, and here it's translated as continuous practice, but the G means like observance. So sometimes it's translated as practices and observances, or conduct and observances, or practice and maintaining. G is maintaining. It's slightly related to time, and it's like over, you know, observing and maintaining something through over time, but it's a different character. So in this continuous practice essay of Dogen, he mentions these four. Also, just it starts off, on the great road of Buddha ancestors, there's always unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained. It forms the circle of the way and is never cut off. So continuous practice is not a linear thing, but it's the circle of the way that he mentions throughout. It's a cyclical, like an enso. Sumi circle is just wholeness, completeness, no beginning and end. And that's how Dogen's approaching continuous practice here. He says, between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there's not a moment's gap. So these are the same four again. Here it's translated as between the way aspiration, or the way-seeking mind, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana. So those four kind of phases that we usually think of traditionally are taught to be like over time. Here, Dogen says, between these four, this aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there's not a moment's gap. They're not different times. So same principle as all of these are time and are being. What does he say? Uji. The aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana are nothing but being, nothing but time. And here it's, between them there's not a moment's gap. Like, same thing, you know, that he's writing at a later time, very much in accord. And also similarly, continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is undivided, not forced by you or others. The power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. And it means your practice affects the entire earth and the entire sky in 10 directions. Although not noticed by others or by yourself, it is so. So each phase of practice, just the aspiration, however slight it might be, we hear about Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and we have this little stirring in our heart of, I want to do that, I want to take this up, and find some freedom, find this jewel in the pile of shit, as we say, for the benefit of all beings, find this peace in the midst of chaotic life, and have that, and offer that as a gift to everyone. That little spark right in the heart of bodhicitta. And then we start engaging in practice. Here we are. And the practice, any moment of letting go of our stuff, for even just a moment in a small way, is this little confirmation. And that's why I think, that's what keeps us going, I think, too, right? We practice and we get a little, if we didn't get any little bit of confirmation at all, we probably would have given up by now. We get a little, Buddha, it's like Buddha coming and kind of like verifying that we're on the right track. Even just a little bit. And then, yes.
There's something in this that's puzzled me before when I was studying that. It is that, and I think this is a false concept, but it gives me the impression that at the moment of aspiration, that there's a division before and after aspiration, before and after we rouse bodhicitta and enter the way.
Mm.
And I don't see that, and I don't think, in his body of works, Dogen says that, but he always talks about, practice realization. Well, what about, what about bricklayer Joe and teacher Nanette who doesn't know anything about bodhicitta?
You could say, why start there? He's those four. There's not a moment's gap between those four, but what about before that?
What about before?
You could say, you could say delusion, delusion, bodhicitta, enlightenment, and, between that, all of them, there's not a moment's gap. So sometimes that is emphasized. Yeah. Ultimately, there's not a moment's gap between anything, ever. I mean, that's the Uji emphasis, too. And, of course, we're... I think Dogen's emphasizing that even more in Uji, but in Gyoji, in the continuous practice, he also says things like, I think I brought this one up last week, where he says one of the really beautiful parts in this kind of long introduction to what continuous practice is, from his point of view, even if you might try to ignore it, even if you might try to ignore continuous practice or bodhicitta or any of it, in order to, here it says, hide a crooked intention and escape from it. It's translated in different ways. But in other words, if you try to escape from practice, even if you don't, maybe escaping from it would be even like bricklayer Joe, who just I heard about that Buddhism stuff, it's got nothing to do with me. I could say that would be even a little escape from it. That ignoring would also be continuous practice. So he does give it to us there.
But not really. That could also be once you pick it up, you can't put it down.
Mm-hmm.
But what about before you
pick it up? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's something dynamic there, because sometimes we hear that, it's all it. And sometimes, and particularly this this essay, he's trying to be more inclusive in this way, but then he really, as you know, having read this Gyoji, right, he starts putting all these like extreme practices, right, kind of saying, he first gives this all-inclusive thing, there's not a moment's gap between this, even trying to escape it is still it, and then he starts going through all these Buddhas and ancestors and things like, you know, putting a stupa on top of your head so that if you fall asleep while doing zazen, the stupa will fall off. And it's ancestors who did that, and the ancestors who never lay down for 40 years, and Shakyamuni Buddha, doing all these difficult practices. It's like one of the longer Shobogenzo essays, and it's a long list of difficult practices that these ancestors did. So there's that side too, and maybe in this essay he's particularly trying to rouse the energy of his assembly at that time, and say you can't actually escape from it, and yet I think right after that part, right there, where he says, you know, even if you might try to ignore it, this ignoring would also be continuous practice. To go off here and there looking for continuous practice appears similar to the aspiration for it. That's kind of like you think that you're not doing it and you're looking for it elsewhere. Sounds like that. But this is like leaving behind the treasure at the home of your true parents and wandering poor in another land. You know, there is continuous practice that looks like this poverty-stricken wandering off into delusion, even though it's continuous practice. So while you are searching in this way, the Dharma treasure would be missed. This being so, continuous practice should not slacken even for a moment. So that's, and then he launches into not slackening stories. So interesting, there usually is this interplay, because if we just have the side of, well, everything is it, then like, why would we come here so early in the morning and sit for 7 days on end and so on? So it's like, it is all it, and yet, as in this case, Dogen's saying, even escape, trying to escape from it is still it, and yet, don't slacken your continuous practice for a moment. There's always that, if we miss either side, we get one-sided, I think. Mm-hmm. So, and you could say for people who've never heard about it, I mean, that's it, pushing it even further. For people who don't think of practice as practice, I think there's many, many people we know of who are like living like bodhisattva vow, but have never heard anything about Buddhism, mm-hmm. right? So I think there's that too. It doesn't have to be within any particular tradition or anything like that. I think we could agree on that. And yet, then there's people, like, and by bodhisattva vow, meaning like they're just trying to live selflessly for the benefit of all beings and enjoying what is. There are many, many people. And you could say there, that's practice that's verifying, you know, Buddha's mind or the mind of freedom. But we could say, well, what about those who are seen to be really lost and not verifying? That's why I think this thing of like the tricky part, and people will talk about it in all different ways, is practice and realization, not to. Because I think if we just say, well, everything is practice, totally, total harm and everything is also practice and verifying Buddhahood, and, you know, on some really deep ultimate level, maybe we could say that is so. But I don't think that's what Dogen intends. It's kind of like, I mean, in some level that's there, but I hear it more as, you know, the practice that's actually like letting go of ourself is verifying peace. So, and that might happen to anybody in any situation. And at those times, there they're totally in accord. And we could say when not, like we can know from our point of view, having contemplated this and open to it more and more deeply, that we can see beings really suffering, caught up in their own stuff, and see how and see their Buddha nature. Right? We, to some extent, we can know that actually they are free. They're just like there's this obscuration blocking their own view from the beautiful person that they are, that maybe we can see, but it's hard for them to see. And I think we can't deny that there's people who are really blocked from that, and even ourselves are really blocked from this often. Yeah.
It just occurred to me in this context of time that people may spend a lifetime confused and shut off from their Buddha nature, and we all do spend, you know, various moments
mm-hmm.
in that state.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the same. It's just,
mm-hmm. it's just time, yeah.
One moment or a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the more we know that's just like the time being as three heads and eight arms of this angry demon of us, then that's just like, you know, we're abiding in our Dharma position of suffering at a given moment. If we see what that truly means, really we're abiding in that Dharma position. In other words, everything is supporting us to suffer right now. The whole universe is like, completely offering this total gift of painful misery for a moment, and nothing's preventing it. It's like total flow, and how could it be otherwise? Because of the way everything is set up right now. That's kind of like what abiding in a Dharma position is. Right? And the more we can see that, then right at the bottom of that miserable Dharma position, we're just like right where our butt is stuck on the cushion of that Dharma position. There's this, you know, ease, maybe. Or maybe ease is too much to say, right? It's like the suffering's still there, but like we know that it's just the time being of difficulty.
Can I ask something in this regard?
Yeah.
Right there, because I was... A quick question about the Metta Sutta. What is meant with "may all beings be happy"?
What do you think is meant?
What do I think? Mm. I would think in this context, may they find that ease. That
mm-hmm. They want to work. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I've heard it translated as "may all beings be at ease." So I think it's not "may they be kind of giddy happy," okay. But "may they be at ease or at peace."
Free from suffering.
Free from suffering. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and even in small ways, I think the Metta Sutta includes, like, you know, beings who are starving and stuff, may they be at ease of just finding something to eat and being, like, basically, have their basic needs met and basically nourished and so on, up to being in the complete ease of Buddha, or everything in between, whatever, yeah, it's like our wish for all beings. And it's a happy, it puts us at ease to even wish that, doesn't it? Okay. So then the next paragraph, just actualize all time as all being. There's nothing extra. So actualize here is genjo, another one of those favorite phrases of Dogen, genjo koan, which I think the whole phrase genjo koan even appears later in Uji. He uses throughout his his life in various essays, Genjo Koan, meaning we often translate as actualizing the fundamental point, but Genjo means actualizing or manifesting, and Dogen uses that phrase a lot as because it's very similar to the time being is like an actualized moment. It's like a expressed, arisen, manifested experience, as opposed to like nothing is actualized. So actualization, manifestation, just actualize all time as all being. You know, there it's kind of like an imperative, but it could probably be translated as all time is actualized as all being. There's nothing extra. An extra being is thoroughly an extra being. Now, this is a really neat paragraph, I think, here. He's going to go into this this thing about extra and partway. So there's nothing extra, and there's nothing lacking. Like we say in the Xin Xin Ming, we chant in the morning the song of the trusting mind. And there's that line where the way is perfect, like vast space, where nothing is lacking and nothing is extra. Yeah, it's one of those beautiful lines in that poem. The way is perfect, like vast space. And in space, nothing's extra in space, right? That's a silly idea. And nothing's lacking in vast space. And the way, the Buddha way, is like that. Nothing's lacking and nothing's extra. So here we're going to deal with these issues. You know, just actualize all time as all being. You know, that's a full, complete expression, like vast space. There's nothing extra. An extra being is thoroughly an extra being. So there's nothing extra, but if we think that, well, there's space and then there's like an additional little extra space, or if that doesn't make sense, we think that there's this practice of the moment. We're sitting here in Zazen, say, and it's like this, and then we get and we're like a little distracted, and then we just settle into an even deeper moment. We get a little extra stillness, for example. That extra being in Zazen, you could say, is thoroughly an extra being. It's not, in other words, it's not really extra. It's just, it's its own thorough manifestation of the whole experience of Zazen at that time. It's not really like an extra deepening of stillness. It's just, it's a thorough expression completed in itself. The extraness is abiding in the Dharma position of extraness. And this goes on here. So we keep going. Thus, the time being half actualized is half of the time being completely actualized.
Oh my God.
So you could, first that might seem like a little wordplay, but then if you look at it, isn't it neat? It's like,
okay, help me understand how
the time being half actualized is half the time being completely actualized. So if you have, it's kind of like we imagine that, like, that we're like, okay, let's practice the time being. It's like, here we are, we're like settling into this moment as this being, our Dharma position right now, supported by all things, fully including everything and independent of everything. Here we are, but actually, where there's doubt arising, for example, it's like, I'm kind of on board with this, but I kind of doubt it and I'm a little confused. So like, I'm kind of half actualizing the time being, aren't I? This would be an example, I think.
You showed up.
Yeah, I showed up.
Time.
I sat down. I'm half doing Zazen. I mean, I'm sitting in the posture, right? And I'm like, I'm half wholehearted. or half-hearted. And I think this is what we're kind of getting into here. the time being half actualized, I think it's never really, right? But when we think that we're half actualizing the time being, it's actually half of the time being completely actualized. It means it's like, so it's kind of playing with this idea. It's like, it's really the whole time being, but you could say it's half of the complete story of Zazen. You know, like we're keeping the posture, and yet we're like, we really don't want to let go of this particular storyline in Zazen. Sound familiar? It's like, this one, let's roll with it. Next period, like, I'll sit, but like, this one's too good to let go. Too good or too bad to let go, right? Like, I have to vent, internally vent here a little longer. So, like, kind of like, this time being, or this moment of Zazen is, we're like half, you know, we're halfway sitting where maybe our idea of complete wholehearted Zazen, where we're just willing to let go of all of it. But that halfway Zazen is not really halfway Zazen. It's just like half of complete Zazen. You know, it is complete Zazen, but it's like half of it. Can you follow that? It's emphasizing that it's complete in itself, but you can still call it, you know, half. You can still call it like, well, from our conventional point of view, it's like we can say, well, it's missing these aspects of like total concentration or something.
Of what I expected,
you know. So, you know, again, it's playing with maybe conventional and ultimate.
And the other half is that it's completely what it is?
Well, let's see. The time being half actualized is it's not really that way. It's actually half of the time being completely actualized. In other words, that's the key point. Yeah, that the half is completely actualized. So, like, I'm half-heartedly sitting Zazen, but this half-hearted expression of Zazen is completely actualized. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fully half-hearted.
Yeah, fully half-hearted. Yeah.
It's a half dollar.
It's a half dollar. And if we can see it that way, I mean, I think it's really, this is a really great paragraph, I think, because if we can really open to this, what feels like a half-hearted expression really is the complete expression. And that's another way of talking about each thing abiding in its Dharma position. The Dharma position of this, you know, say, sleepy Zazen period is just complete sleepy Zazen period. Like, in other words, there's nothing missing and nothing extra. And you could say, if we really you know, open to that and let that, you know, seep in to our Zazen, then it's a different experience than when we're resisting feeling like this is really half-hearted, I'm really not sitting. You know, it changes it.
Well, it's kind of it's the justice.
Accepting.
Yeah, justice.
Accepting the present.
You know, it's this. It's this. Yeah. Whatever this is.
Right.
Resistance or sleepiness or.
This is me thinking.
The full thisness.
Yep. I think that's the point being made.
And kind of being aware that it's this. You know. This. This.
Yeah. Being aware that it's this and not trying to add extra, you know, non-sleepiness or more concentration or subtract anything, like subtract some of these negative thoughts. Like there's nothing lacking and nothing extra. That's the way of this moment of Zazen. And it's always the case. And yet it's a trap that is so easy to, almost impossible not to fall into this when we're sitting, because we have these ideals of, you know, what it could be. And we've maybe even been in a more ideal Zazen than this one. So it's very natural that we think, well, couldn't it be a little more like this or that? But it's the exact same point of this whole essay of the time being, actually, too, right? It's like each thing is just this time and this being here and now experience of sleepy Zazen. And each thing is abiding in its Dharma position. And they can't be, there's no better or worse in terms of Dharma positions by definition. It's like the dependently co-arisen situation here, if you compare it to the dependently co-arisen situation here, it's like, I mean, you can compare, you can say they're different because each dharma position, that's the point of saying it's a position, and that it's like, it's a different position than this position, but they're all dharma positions, and they're all equally dependently co-arisen and equally valid. So they can't be compared in terms of better or worse. This also goes back to the next question of, you know, what about no practice at all? So, you know, on the deepest level, yeah, of course, it can't be compared. Non-practice can't even be compared to practice. And yet if we just fall into that side without saying, yet don't slacken continuous practice for an instant, then it's one-sided, I think. It's tricky. Yeah.
Back to Bill Brickley. Who can say that he isn't practicing as hard as he can with what he's got to work with?
Well, in a way, we're all practicing as hard as we can. It came up in some discussion recently. I was saying to someone, we're all... It's not like we're all doing the best that we can and the worst that we can each moment, like by definition.
Yesterday.
Maybe. Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
At the one-day sitting.
The best and the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, you know, that's, again, the dharma position. It's like things can't be better than they are right now. How could they be? According to the conditions. And also, they can't be worse. So actually, this is the best of all possible worlds. And it's also the worst. It's like, you know, and they're no different at all. It's like it can't, because this time being, this dharma position, can't be different than it is in this moment. It is the best.
But I expected more.
Yeah, we expect, you expect more. And you're expecting more is also the best and the worst. Yeah.
You are 50 cents, and if you want to be a penny, you're still, you know...
an entire coin.
It's all a buck, you know, in a way, no matter what part you are of it. It seems,
yeah.
Expectation seems to throw it off balance.
Expectations is a big part, yeah. Yeah.
Suffering. I mean, yeah, expectation
of
suffering.
Yeah, or thinking that we should be doing better. Like the, I like that commentary on Nagarjuna's chapter on time, the commentary by Kenpo Tsultrum Gyamtso. He was saying, like, some of the practical applications of seeing the emptiness of time is that if we think we've been practicing a really long time, shouldn't we be, like, further along? Shouldn't our practice be better? And, like, If you don't reify time as this thing, then like you don't have to suffer under that notion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's because it's just this time being now, and so. But if we expect like, well, if I sit this long, then there will be a great result, right? Then that's the kind of like an expectation based around time. In fact, expectation itself is future oriented, right? We're expecting a future time to be a certain way. So that's another benefit of the time being, just always here now, is impossible in a way, and impossible not to be in a way. It frees us from the expectation of either good or bad, like the future, this is going to be a really difficult, this next thing that I have to do is, I can't even imagine how I'm going to face this, that kind of fear, negative expectation, or like, it's going to be so great, and then we're just disappointed. Just always nothing but this time being. Yeah. So So the time being half actualized is half of the time being completely actualized. And a moment that seems to be missed is also completely being. This is another variation on the theme, right? I missed the opportunity. We can feel that way at the end of a period of zazen sometimes. Yeah. Right? Like the bell rings, I missed it, or like, you know, or sometimes I'll catch myself near the end of a period being like, oh, okay, no, come on, really now, like, let's sit. And then, like, you know, it's like a minute later the bell rings. And, oh, I missed all those times before then. But that moment, or many moments that seem to be missed, are completely being. They are the time being. In the same way, even the moment before or after the moment that appears to be missed is also the time being complete in itself. So it's getting even more elaborate, right? And this whole idea of like that the moment that we missed, then there's these moments before and after the moment that we missed. It's kind of weird, but were they missed or not? You know, it's just playing with time here. But all of that is the time being complete in itself, which is also Genjo. It's the Uji Genjo. So vigorously abiding in each moment, and that's again literally abiding in the Dharma position, Ju Ho Yi. Vigorously abiding in this Dharma position is the time being. So these are equivalents, really. Abiding in our Dharma position is the time being. Do not mistakenly confuse it as non-being. Do not forcefully assert it as being. Mm-hmm. So here it's getting to this issue of mu and u. Mm-hmm. Right? Non-being is mu, mm-hmm. Nothing, non-being, and being is u. So so right after the abiding in the Dharma position is the time being. So now a little commentary about abiding in the Dharma position is, don't mistakenly confuse that as just non-being or just total emptiness of negation, because it's abiding. It's ju means abode, or abiding, dwelling in the Dharma position. So it's not non-being, but also don't forcefully assert it as being in some reified way. So it's the middle way. The abiding in the Dharma position of the time being is not non-being, and it's not forcefully asserted as a reified being.
Could you use the words form and emptiness? In
yeah,
case?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I would say equivalence in that case.
What is another word for abiding?
Dwelling or maybe even living in, but not necessarily. Abode or dwelling or abiding.
Vigorously abiding, I mean, that's a pretty interesting, strong combination of words, you know? I mean, usually abiding seems passive.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, I think this is the case, actually.
This is the one about the slapping fish.
Yes, yes.
The slapping fish.
Yeah, that little footnote of the Japanese word. It's like...
Kapatsupachi.
Kapatsupachi.
An onomatopoetic description of the lively movement of a leaping fish.
Oh,
it is often used to describe outstanding Zen activity. Here, it stands for what is utterly ungraspable and unclassifiable into distinctions such as nothingness and being, impermanence and permanence. And his line is the way Waddell and Abe have said this is, the sharp, vital, quick of dharmas dwelling in their dharma positions is itself being time.
The sharp, vital, quick.
Yeah. That's the Kapatsupachi. You must not, by your own maneuvering, make it into nothingness. You must not force it into being.
Hmm. Nice. So, like, the way, that's a great point, that the way things are abiding in their Dharma position, we might think they're just at rest. And in a way, they are peacefully at rest, every phenomena abiding in its Dharma position, and yet, from another perspective, it's like the flapping, vigorous flapping of a fish. It's very dynamic, expressive, and it's not static at all. Did people see that video of the Santa Cruz whale almost flapping onto a surfer? This is in the news just from the other day. They were just out in front of the boardwalks. They were filming someone on a surfboard, and it was just this great moment that they happened to be filming that. And right in front of the camera, there's two whales. Just leapt out of the water right in front of the camera. Huge, huge, I don't know, blue whales or what they are. And humpback whales. And like, you know, right between the camera and the surfboard. And like, with all these little fish that I think they were trying to catch, fish just flying everywhere, it's tiny little fish. And all these seagulls like all over the place at the same time. Like, whoa.
Well, it sounds like...
Perfect.
Kapha Tsupachi. Kapha Tsupachi event, and each whale was just abiding in his Dharma position, but like it wasn't, you know, and we could say it's, you know, one snapshot moment of being time of that whale is totally at peace, right? It's like, it's unmoving peace, and yet the way it looks to us is totally dynamic. Splashing about. Yeah, always these, like, you know, two sides of everything. Total rest and peace and total flipping, flapping, splish, splash in the bath at the very same time. Vigorously abiding in each moment is the time being. Do not mistakenly confuse it as non-being. Do not forcefully assert it as being. So now I think that the next paragraph, Dogen's kind of picking up on these lines about being a non-being, say form and emptiness. And I kind of had that sense here a little bit when he says, you may suppose that time is only passing away and not understand that time never arrives. I think he's getting into the more emptiness side here of like time is actually not coming and going. So here it's, you know, we're saying the time being is abiding in its Dharma position. It is manifested in the moment. And yet here, you may not understand that time never arrives. So this is the side where time doesn't arrive, it doesn't come and go. And although understanding itself is time, understanding does not depend on its own arrival. So that's a part that's translated in various different ways. Like, although understanding itself is time, there is no chance for it to be drawn in by time. Or, although understanding itself is time, it has no relation drawn by another. So, understanding is time, but it's not trapped by time or in time. You know, understanding in this case, like awakened understanding, is not limited by time. It's almost like it's timeless. It's outside of time, is how I'm hearing this. And again, it's kind of, now we're talking about the outside of the manifestation that we can experience here and now, just like this. It's kind of, it never arrives, and it's not drawn in by time. People, literally, it says skin bags, in this case. Skin bags only see times coming and going, and do not thoroughly understand that the time being abides in each moment. So, it appears like daylight savings time changed a day, and we gained an hour, but we don't thoroughly understand that the time being abides in each moment. This is kind of like the same point to be made throughout. Right? Then, when can they penetrate the barrier? Even if people recognize the time, so penetrate the barrier is like break through the barrier of delusion. If we don't understand the time being abiding in each moment, how can we break through the barrier of delusion? Even if people recognize the time being in each moment, who could give expression to this recognition? So this is another dynamic part here, that the time being in each moment is, again, it's not abiding Dharma position here, it's just abiding position, so I'm still bringing this up. Even if people recognize the time being abiding in its position, who could give expression, and this is Dotoku, a name of another Dogen fascicle about complete expression, not just understanding, but expressing. How do we express the understanding through words or actions and so on? So another favorite expression of Dogen is expression. Who could give expression to this recognition? And so this here is emo. So we got lots going on here. Emo is this another Shobogenzo fascicle title, meaning thus, or it, or the ineffable. So who could dotoku this emo? Who could express suchness, you could say? Every translation, you know, loses some aspect here. It's why it's nice to have a bunch. I think here you could say, or it's saying, who can actually do that? So here's some other translations thank you very much, Harry. This comes from the fact you found this compilation of eight different translations of side by side of Uji, including one in Spanish.
Oh!
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah. So, this particular part here is, you know, captured in different ways where we are here. So this is even. If people recognize the time being in each moment, who could give expression to this recognition? So even among those who are conscious of abiding in their place, who can express the state of having already attained the ineffable? Should I read that again? Even among those who are conscious of abiding in their place, so it's kind of like, or even those who are conscious of it and can express it, we could even say, who can express the state of already having attained the ineffable? Or even among those who see time as what is present now in the universe, who can express clearly what the ineffable something is that they have already got? So I think it's the who in here is more like a rhetorical question. Yeah. Even if we comprehend that it, capital I, is what persists, who can express in words what this, capital T, is that we have realized? Even recognizing remaining in position, who can express the preservation of already being such? And even if someone did know that dwelling position, who would be able truly to give an utterance that preserved what he had thus gained?
Wow!
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Ye
Mm-hmm. Because how can you express the inevitable?
Yeah.
The mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's saying so. And of course, Dogen spends 95 fascicles of the Shobogenzo trying to express the ineffable. But then he gets to these points where he's like, you know, even if he's gets down to the bottom here, right? Even if, you know, one recognizes that one's dwelling in one's dharma position as the time being, and can express it. So it's expression comes up twice in here. It looks like it's really like, even if you can express the time being, how can you express the ineffable that you already are? Something like, in the end, it's unspeakable, inexpressible.
I mean, isn't that like where you get the finger and Kasyapa with the, what does he do? He holds up the flower or something?
Yeah, that's what Rich just said, yeah.
The expression of the ineffable, that only he sort of was able to, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's those enlightenment moments where they do those weird, you know, all kinds of weird things.
Mm-hmm.
Different for each.
But, you know, when you mentioned, well, is this who, like the, you know,
a conventional
who, or is it actually like, Dogen also uses who sometimes to be like, the ineffable itself.
Mm.
Yeah, like, in non-thinking, there's a who, and this who is sustains us, for example, Dogen says at one point. So if we take it to be that kind of who, then you could say, well, even if someone knows that dwelling position, who would be able to truly give an utterance that preserved what he had thus gained? So, you know, who... So that's a nice twist that we have here, actually, is that who actually can express. Who is the only one who really can give an utterance, is another word for dotoku. Who can express. Because in a way, that is, holding up the flower is an expression. And who, as Tenshin Roshi would sometimes say, who is an abbreviation for world honored one. The world honored one can give an expression.
So the complete Buddha nature is the expression of the ineffable.
Yeah. Buddha nature is always expressing the ineffable. And I think if you looked in this Dotoku chapter of Dogen, we'd see that expression is always happening, just like continuous practice is always happening. In a way, all these different ways of talking about this in very creative ways, bringing up all these different stories and angles, always have these two sides of, like, you know, everything is expressing everything all the time, and yet we must express. We must express it. We can't avoid expressing it, or our avoiding expressing it is still expressing it. And yet we must wholeheartedly express. I think this dynamic is what Dogen's always playing with. And, you know, I can't remember exactly how he does it in Dotoku. I know Kathy's been studied Dotoku. Does he ever say in there, do you know, offhand, like, if expression is always happening?
If, well, there's a whole section where he does get into that.
Yeah, I would guess.
Patrick's become quite the Dotoku scholar as well. He impressed me the other day.
And I know Patrick Patrick gave a talk on emo once also. Shobogenzo emo, or thus, or such. So it's great that, you know, Dogen, we miss it a lot in these. Even Kaz Ta-Nehisi, you know, he won't. It'd be nice if he kind of cross-referenced himself and used the same term each time it came up, so we'd have that to go on. But he's so creative with it. It's just like, well, today I'm going to translate it this way, or in this fascicle it's going to come out like this. So, let's see. Where we are here. Who could give expression to this recognition? This recognition, or recognition of thus. Even if they could give expression to this recognition for a long time, who could stop looking for the realization of the original face? Or who could stop groping for this? So again, that translation didn't quite get the full feeling of it, I don't think. Even among those who have been asserting that they have it already, none of them have stopped groping around trying to find out who they already are.
Who's that?
That's, I think, it was Luchford, or it's a kind of unpublished one, I think.
Similar, very similar to this.
Oh. Oh, that
one. We have this one in there too.
Yeah, that one's...
Even among those who...
Oh, yeah. Even among those who are conscious of abiding in their place, who can express the state of already having... Oh, no. Even among those who have been asserting for a long time that they are like this, there is none who's not still groping for the manifestation before them of the real features. Even if they have long expressed it as such, still everyone gropes for the appearance of its countenance. Even were someone able to utter such an utterance at will, he could still not avoid groping to make his original face immediately present. So it's like, you know, we had this previous statement of like, even if one did recognize the time being in each moment, who could really give complete expression to thus? But then it's kind of like leaves you at the bottom, and then it's another little thing that Dogen likes to do. It's like you think, well, what could you say beyond that? And then it's like, even if they could, you know, who could ever possibly express thusness? But even if they could give expression to thus for a long time, kind of like well, of course. Kind of like, this could happen, couldn't it? But who could actually stop groping around for the realization of the original face? Almost like kind of cutting down a little bit the, you know, what seems like the world-honored one expressing thusness with a flower or something. Even if they could do that over and over again, still, even they are like just groping around in the dark for their original face.
Well, is it like the same, or maybe the same, you know, kind of human consciousness is always going to be limited? And so,
yes.
So there'll be this tension of trying to grasp something that's in grasp.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's no possible way, like in the Jijiyu Zamai, what can be met with recognition is not realization itself, because realization is not reached by a deluded mind. So if we ever like can really express like this is it, it's like, but that's not it, or that's. Realization cannot be reached by a deluded mind, and I think deluded in this case means like a dualistic consciousness, or ordinary dualistic consciousness, can't recognize it or thus as an object outside itself. That would just be making it into a thing. Thusness is not something. So, I think that's a nice point, that it's human consciousness will inevitably grope for to get a hold of something all the time, and that's just its nature, and our original face is ungraspable.
Somewhere I once heard Cameron aware that it's like blind people discussing the color of the sky.
Nice, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then And even like, and sometimes similarly, it's like described like, you know, really tasting or verifying the way is like drinking water and knowing whether it's hot or cold, but not being able to explain to somebody what hot or cold is without them having the concept of it. So kind of like a blind or see or a person see actually a non-blind person seeing the color of the sky, but then trying to describe it to a blind person. According to an ordinary person's view of the time being, even enlightenment and nirvana as the time being would be merely aspects of coming and going. According to an ordinary person's view of the time being, we might think of the time being of enlightenment and nirvana are these things that that arise later in our practice, so that they come at a certain time and they go, rather than this way that Dogen expressed earlier about aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana. There's not a moment's gap between them, and they're all the circle of the way, and they're all time and all being. So they actually don't come and go. And actually, nirvana traditionally is defined as not coming and going. But when we think of like attaining nirvana, we think of it as something that comes at a certain time, that begins at a certain time. But it, by its very definition, it doesn't. It's the non-coming and going. But when we ordinarily look at time being, well, there's the time being now of non-nirvana, and there'll be a time being of nirvana that will come at some point, but that's not the way it is. So it seems like this whole paragraph is about this non-coming and going, non-arising and ceasing aspect. And then the next paragraph is going to be about the entirely actualized and the manifestation and the Genjo of Uji, the Uji Genjo. So we'll save that for next time. Any thoughts on any of this discussion today? Or as we go through this, appreciating the nuances of what Dogen's pointing to as here and now, just the basic experience of here and now in this very intricate, complex, and strange way. Is it having any effect on anyone's practice? Do you feel like, does it come up in zazen, or is it good medicine for daily life when we're caught up in past and future, thinking that there's something lacking or extra?
Well, this does bring the topic kind of more readily available, this focus on during this practice period. So that, I've had a lot of realizations that a lot of my suffering about different aspects of things has to do with how I imagine the future will be if this situation doesn't get resolved. And it's all about fear of what this will lead to. But then when I realized that everything is impermanent, you know, the future that our fear creates doesn't really even exist. And then I can just be more with what's going on right now and just work through it.
Or you could say it exists.
We're willing to accept the situation from a, I can say, from a constructive perspective instead of a fearful one.
Yeah. It doesn't exist in the way we think it does, but in terms of its 10 times, right? It's, you could say it's the future of the present. Like it exists in the present as your mind's idea of it.
Exactly.
But which is not any more than that.
It's just an illusion. It's just an idea. It's just an idea.
Yeah.
So, and how could it be, when you're right, when I'm right in the middle of something that's really torturing me, how could the future be any worse than now? And if I can handle it now, then I can handle anything. So just get right here and just deal with it.
It will always be now that we'll have to deal with.
It will always be now that we'll have to deal with. You know, that future will probably never come anyway, the one that I imagined. So that's kind of, it's been helping me with that.
Yeah. And when it comes, it'll be abiding in its Dharma position as it must be, and everything will be supporting it to be that way, and we'll be part of that, and we don't know who we will be at such a time.
Yeah, if such a time ever comes,
it'll
be this person that's in it.
Yeah, because such a time doesn't really come and go. So, the time being percolates into our time being. The time being has come to conclude. May our intention equally extend to every being, time, and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.